We are three friends who are talking and learning from interesting people, working in various industries, sharing their stories and journeys so far. These are your hosts,
Hiloni Punadar,
Atit Kothari,
and Tapan Desai, and this is What We Had. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on any episodes.
Hi everyone. Today we have with us Prajeet Nayar, an engineer turned IAS officer and a proud father of his cat Mushu. In this episode, he talks to us about his fight with failure on his journey of UPSC examination and then finally cracking it. Also, why he chose to dedicate his life in service of people. He gives insights about personality traits that would help you crack the UPSC examination and three reasons why one should choose the journey of an IAS officer. He gives us a look into his day-to-day life and talks about his current roles and responsibilities. So let's dive into his conversation and know more about Prajeet Nayar's journey.
So like Hiloni said, right, you chose a path which is very different from a lot of engineers. Why did you select that path? And before we even do that, what do you do right now? For people who don't know,
what I do right now is I'm posted as a subdivisional officer and as a project officer in Jawar, which is a subdivision in Palghar district. What I do is actually a question which even I haven't been able to find out a definitive answer, but it straddles a lot of realms of law and order, developmental, regulatory works. To be very brief.
Okay, and why did you decide to do this? Why not normal engineering route, get a job in a multinational or do a master's or something like that?
So this particular thought came up to me sometime in my third year of engineering, and the reason why I did it was probably because this is a field that is pretty multidimensional. There are a lot of dimensions that as an engineer I never could explore. Just to give an example, I liked studying history. I had an interest in studying geography and also a lot of newspaper. So the varied interest part of it is what attracted me to the job. And this not being the norm is something that's only limited to Mumbai. But if you look at anywhere across the country, this is a pretty common job which any middle-class guy aspires for. Take any village, take any city, something that's not, other than Bombay. If you go to any town, there will be a lot of people who want this kind of a job.
So do you use like history and geography like in your day-to-day job, like, or you just had to study it?
We do use it. So just to give you an example, so right now where I'm posted in Palghar, there's a block called as Dhanu. Dhanu for the past 3 years has been getting something called as earthquake swarms. Now, this is basically very low intensity earthquakes that happen very intermittently. So like in the past 2 weeks, we had around three earthquakes ranging in between 3.6 to 4 in the Richter scale. So now this is something that as a layperson who has never studied geography might not be able to make sense of it. Why does this happen? What are the underlying causes behind it? And to what extent should we be fearing about it? But a general interest in geography kind of helps you understand why does this happen? And what is the maximum that we are expecting in terms of damages? And what can we probably do to, you know, kind of keep the damages at the minimum? Take history for that matter. If you in law and order, you do encounter like what is the history of a region, what is the society in that region, and if a particular thing happens, why does it happen? So this kind of knowledge kind of helps you in the day-to-day activities that you do as a part of the job.
When did you start preparing for IAS?
So I started immediately after my engineering. My journey is similar to what whatever you have heard. It took me 4 years. So it took me 3 attempts. This was given between 2014 till 2017. And I faced the same cycle of starting it, failing in it, and then redoing it again and again. Till I became more on or I exhausted the attempts. So I was lucky that I was plain lucky that I did it, could do it in my third attempt.
Can you like elaborate on that? For me personally, I have no idea what the I keep hearing about GRE and MBA exams. I know about that, mm-hmm. but like you are the first person I'm talking to who has taken UPSC exam. So like, what are the subject? What do you guys study? And like, are there classes? Like, what do you do?
I mean, everyone knows about it, but then nobody has kind of gone and, you know, just seen what exactly does it constitute of. So the government has a body called as UPSC, which is Union Public Service Commission. It's like a conducting organization, which has various recruitments. So IAS is just one of it. There are other recruitments that it takes via the exams also. So the exam is basically a three-step process. So the exam is actually called as a civil service examination, CSE. There are three stages to it. First is the civil services prelims, which is basically consists of two papers. One is an aptitude paper, and the second one is a general studies paper. Both these papers are objective. There is a cutoff associated with these papers. And if you happen to clear that cutoff, you move on to the second stage, which is the civil services mains, CSM. Now in this, there are total 9 papers, which are subjective in nature. Of this, 2 are languages. So one was English and the second is a regional language. I chose Hindi. And the remaining 7 papers, 4 of them are called general studies. So it's general studies 1, 2, 3, 4. And then there is an essay paper. And there are 2 papers which are associated with the subject, which is optional. So the optional can be anything. There are various optionals. So for engineers, there's electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, civil engineering. There are also pure sciences like maths, physics, chemistry. And then there are humanities subjects, which includes sociology, psychology, geography, history. So we have to choose one. In this, I chose geography. So I had 2 papers on geography.
Mm-hmm.
Excluding the language papers, the 7 papers, the subjective marks are collated and there's a cutoff for that. If you happen to clear that cutoff, then there's a third step, which is the interview. So the interview is basically a 5-member panel, which is usually headed by a very senior officer or a very senior university dean or a VC. So these are basically members of the UPSC. So the UPSC has 10 member board. So one of them leads the interview. So my interview was by Mrs. Sujata Mehta, ma'am. She is an IFS officer. I think the last role that she led was West Asian secretary. So I was interviewed by her, and then my marks in the interview and the CSM mains are collated, and then there's a rank list. So on the basis of the rank list, on my marks, I was given a rank, and then that rank is basically used to decide which service you will get. So I give a list of services that I prefer, and they match it. If there's a vacancy for it, they give it. So there are 24 different services through which in this exam. Like if you write this exam, if you clear it, there are 24 different services. So this includes IAS, IPS, IRS, IFS. There are 24 different ones. And to be frank, even I don't know all of them. So I just knew that I had to get, I did submit my preferences, but I basically desired the IAS. So yeah, that's in a nutshell the whole exam.
Wow.
Yeah.
That seems like a long process.
Yeah. How long does it take, the whole process, all the three steps?
So 1 year is the minimum that it takes. The catch is that if you fail at any point, if you fail at the CS, the prelims, you have to give the prelims next year. If you fail in the mains, you have to give the prelims next year. If you fail in an interview, you'll have to give the prelims next year. So you start from the start. That's the first step every year. So that is what kind of makes it a bit difficult.
You had a special process of preparing, right? You moved away from Mumbai. Why did you do that? Is that a norm that everyone does? And if you have any tips for students?
Yeah. And just to add to like Atit's question, like how in engineering we had like probably two reference books and one easy solution to like, no, okay, this is what you need to study to get through that subject. Like for you, what was that? Like, was there a direct method to go about it or was it like all ambiguous?
There's no direct method. It's all ambiguous. The whole syllabus is basically listed out in a document that is given by UPSC. And you can basically study whatever is available for those subjects. But then, yes, there is a strategy. The reason, as Atit said, I did move to Delhi. To be frank, but the reason I moved to Delhi was I can't study at home. Like that's the frank. There are people who can do that, and like I have batchmates who have studied from home. They have not moved to Delhi. But Delhi for UPSC is like the quota for JEE. So the people do go there, and there are coaching classes. And part of the reason is also that you meet a lot of peers over there. So like a lot of my batchmates are actually my peers in Delhi. So I met them sometime in my preparation, and then we just happened to get selected together, and then we became batchmates and friends. So that's the whole reason that you move to Delhi. But the whole process is ambiguous. Like absolutely no one can tell you with surety that there's a direct way. It's all ambiguous. And a large amount of it emanates from luck. So if you ask me what are the tips that I would give to prospective students, I would say not to apply for this exam because it's pretty... I mean, just to be very frank, not because I like it sounds a bit ironical when I say that, but I do find that there is a huge amount of luck that is associated with the process. I mean, you can factor in your efforts, but then you can't factor in luck, and you can't work around it beyond a point. So there are no tips. I mean, for students. I mean, I absolutely do not I inspire anyone to give this exam because it is a God forbidden exam arena. I mean, if anyone goes and happens to get stuck over there, I just dread that.
And you were talking about your batchmates, like, so did you see a lot of engineering students or like your batchmates were from other diverse fields?
Engineers are a majority, so I would say it's around 70%.
I wasn't expecting
a lighter way of saying that is like basically there are a lot of unemployed engineers in the country that keep trying for this exam. I was one of them, so I
think you had. So like when we were shooting Life in DJ, I think you said you were going to be in IAS or something like that. You had a very different response than most of the people, and that's why you're on the video as well. I don't know if you remember this.
I do remember. I think it was Atit who shoved the camera and asked me, "Is GRE or CAT?" And I'm like, "I'm none." So like, I have neither in mind.
Yeah.
What a spontaneous reaction. Sorry.
No. I do. I fully understand that. So yeah. But I do remember.
So moving back to your role, like as an IAS officer, so if you had to explain it to a 5-year-old, like what you do. How would you do that?
So I would say that there's a company called as the Government of India or Government of Maharashtra. I am a representative of it. And And the core service of this particular company is called governance. And I look after the field operations of that. So that's how I would explain it to a five-year-old.
That's interesting. And then like your roles and responsibility, actually, like what do you do right now day to day? And what does it look like?
So just to give you a perspective. So the whole career of a bureaucrat. So I'm a bureaucrat in the typical sense of the term. So it's a span of around 30 years. So in the initial 10 odd years, what we get is basically executive rules. So this basically consists of interpreting the rules and laws that are given, that are passed by the parliament or which have been passed before, and implementing it on the ground. So this is the cutting edge of the government where it interacts with the citizens. And in the second 10 12 years of the career, it's basically mid-level policy making, which is basically designing or involving yourself in better implementations of these rules and regulations. And the third, the final lap of the career is basically policy making and decisional, which is basically you decide how the policy should be. So this is the normal career graph. So right now what I do is basically the executive role. So in the executive role, broadly, there are various heads that I can probably put it into. So first would be law and order is one of them. Second is the regulatory aspect of it, which includes a wide range of stuff. So I hold two charges. One is subdivisional officer, or it's also called as assistant collector in Maharashtra. And there's another charge called as project officer of integrated tribal development project. This role is mostly developmental, which is basically the state allocates a particular amount of money to the tribals in my subdivision, and I overlook the various schemes and programs that are run from that money. So it's a superintendent role. And then there are various supplementary roles which come into action as and when the situation demands. So like in the present scenario, like for my subdivision, I'm also the incident commander under National Disaster Management. So I look after the whole COVID strategy, control strategy that takes place in my subdivision. So this includes raising COVID care centers, dedicated COVID hospitals, doing the whole process of testing, tracing, and treating the COVID patients. So it's actually huge. I mean, on any given day, there are a lot of stuff that comes up from any of these roles. And then I also sit as a judge in land related matters. So people come with their cases and I adjudicate as to what should be there. I mean, I interpret the law and I give orders as to how these matters need to be resolved. So it's basically a huge gamut of responsibilities. And if you ask me what happens on one particular day, it's basically I'm either handling any one of these roles at that particular day. It's so vast that sometimes even I start realizing, "Achha, haan, ye bhi mera kaam hai."
Yeah, and like you like this number of subjects plus like laws, and like you might, if people are coming to you with problems and you have to apply the law, then you need to know the law that well, right? So uska bhi kitna study and all that, like that's the crazy part.
Study ka to pata nahi, but it's much of the time it's like he gets a law. So basically, agar jisko dikkat rahega, to it's not that I know all the laws, to be very honest.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like it just comes to you, someone who has a problem, studies up the whole stuff ki kiska responsibility hai, and he comes to that officer. So if that officer happens to me, to he'll be like, kaida ye hai, और ये सर आपका काम है. सो देन ठीक है, दो दोनों लेके बैठ के पढ़ो एंड देन प्रोबेबली टेल हिम कि ठीक है आप कल आइए या एक हफ्ते के बाद आइए. तो दैट्स हाउ इट वर्क्स. इट आल्सो वर्क्स इन रिवर्स.
या
okay, so like circling back to your work and your role, so far, what has been like your biggest challenges that you have seen at work and like how have you been able to overcome them?
First would be my own biases. So I do carry a lot of biases as someone who has read a lot on and kind of, in a day-to-day environment. So my biases have been kind of the biggest hurdles. Second would be the sharp learning curve that the job requires. And third would be my own background. So an IAS officer in the initial 12 years of his service is usually on the field in a very tribal or a rural area. And coming from Mumbai, I think I seriously lack that. So there's a huge I don't see it as a disability, but that I do see it as something that kind of hinders my ability to come up to speed in a lot of situations. How I get through them is just by living it at day by day. So the more you meet people, the more your biases get broken, and the more you spend time in these areas, the more you learn about that area. So yeah.
What were some of the common biases that you could see happening in your brain?
One of it is being a city dweller, I did have a few biases regarding the rural area as to what is it. And I used to think that everyone kind of aspires to come to a city. Like my parents grew up in rural Kerala, so they came to the city. So I had, this is just one of the examples how biases work. So understanding that this is not what everyone aspires. And secondly, like I work in a tribal area, so in tribal areas the dynamics are totally different. So I'll recount a particular story of my friend who's posted in Gadchiroli, and there's a tribe over there called as Madia Kund. And in one of the conferences, he was just describing how a tribal looks at time and how a city dweller looks at time. And I was just thinking, ki, haan, yaar, matlab, you know, even I think the same way. So he was like, ki, as someone from the city, let's say Mumbai, I mean, you're so strapped up for time. You think, ki, if I don't get here in time, this will happen and this will happen and this will happen. And the tribal's perspective is totally different. He's like, ki, aaj ka agar 24 ghanta khatam ho jayega, to theek hai, kal wapis 24 ghanta aayega. So, you know, it's a radical way of looking at time. And they live their life in the moment. And they're not bitten by the bug of competition or the bug of, materialism. They have a very relaxed view at life. Now, this is something that you need to understand as to if you need to make an impact in such an area. These are the kind of biases that you're working against. So, and it's pretty radical at different points of time. So these are just two examples that just randomly came to my mind. But I can assure you that there are a lot of biases that we work in. That's driven a lot by our backgrounds and our upbringing and our learnings, mislearnings, misunderstandings. So yeah, so my cat jumped on the Wi-Fi and
Oh, you have a cat? Nice.
I do have a cat. I think I'll just make, I don't know whether it will come in a meeting, but this is the cat.
Oh.
It has an Instagram page. I'll send it to you.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Do you have an Instagram page?
I do.
Okay.
But I'm not that active. I find my
the cat is more active.
Shy person.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cat is more active. More followers than me.
I think the cat should promote the interview then.
Yeah.
It has a guest entry in it.
Yeah. I lost track of the last question. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, even I was thinking the same. Like any differences between city life and then living in a tribal area, and like what changes
and also like seen? Challenges in a tribal area compared to like we take electricity for granted, I think, in Mumbai. But like you said, it's in a good day you have it all the time, and otherwise no, right?
Yeah. Changes a lot on the positive side and a lot less on the negative side. On the positive side, I have access to some of the best organic food.
Farm to table air. Kind of feeling.
Yeah, farm to table. Yeah. Clean air, very less pollution, and the population density is very less. So there are a lot of open spaces, a lot of greenery. And one of my hobbies is running. So I could never run in Mumbai, but the moment I came out of Mumbai, when I saw spaces that, you know, I can go and just have a run, that's something that I can do in this area that I do not think I can ever do anywhere in Mumbai. I can't run on roads. There's a lot of beauty, like within 5 kilometers radius, I think I have a lot of stuff where I can just go and rewind. So there are a lot of valleys where I can just sit on a cliff and read a book. There's a huge reservoir where I can just go beside it, and I'll be the only person sitting there enjoying the view and probably having a cup of tea or reading a book. So these are the kind of things that I like in my posting. On the negative side, yes, power is one of them. It's intermittent, and especially in monsoons, it's very intermittent. So in a big day, it goes off for 6-7 hours at a time. Internet is, I do have a broadband connection, but then it can go off anytime. It's not reliable. And the phone signals are also very weak. So that's a positive as well as a negative. If the positive is that people call you and they don't reach you, and the negative is that you want to call someone and you can't reach them. So yeah, it's basic third world problems.
I mean, this is something that I've always wondered, but do you feel like the people living in tribal areas or remote areas have a higher happiness quotient in their life compared to urban dwellers?
Definitely. Our requirements as urban people are way higher. So when I look at them and what do they desire, it's very less. If you ask someone, aap kya chahte ho? So the answer is pretty basic. So they'll be like, I need... and on the extreme end, if you ask someone, kya chahiye, like, daru chahiye, ya mujhe khana chahiye. And depending upon, like, you know, if it's very poor, he'll just like, mujhe khana chahiye. So, yeah, and if he's a drunkard who doesn't have access to alcohol, he'll be like, daru chahiye. And if you ask us as a student, he'll be very, very simple thing. And when I look back at my life, I'm like, you know, kya kya nahi chahiye. If I look open my Amazon ka wish list, there's a huge list of things that I want. And so that difference is huge. So basically, I do feel that their happiness index is very high.
That's great.
Yeah. Desire is the contract you sign to be unhappy, right?
Yeah.
Novel.
Yeah, he says a lot of stuff. No.
I think I would still, I know that you said IAS exam is something you would definitely have a no-no for a lot of students. But if we had to circle back to that question, and genuinely, like, there are students who want to pursue IAS as an exam, like, what worked out for you, and what would be like top 3 pointers that you would say, I mean, they should kind of do? I mean, luck is not your control, but everything else definitely is under your control, right?
I would rather say it's more of an attitudinal thing than of a skill set or a book set or anything. There are two things that I feel that if you have you have a significant edge on anyone who is preparing for this exam. The first would be curiosity. So being curious about a lot of stuff, from the very mundane to the very complex stuff. The second would be a deep sense of empathy. These two things are, it's not skills per se, it's your attitude. So if you have these two, you have a significant edge of any of a huge amount. And one of the skills that it didn't have a name when I was preparing it, but then I realized over a period of time, it's basically your emotional intelligence. As to how do you handle the whole topsy-turvy preparation phase, because you Everyone just wants to give a single attempt. Everyone wants to clear it in their first attempt. But with a majority, that is not what happens. I think around 15 to 20% candidates clear it in their first attempt. The remaining 80% are basically repeaters. So the moment you fail, you face a huge deluge of emotions. And then if you aren't equipped emotionally, you can fall down a big way. So these three attitudinal stuff is what I feel is very, very imperative that you have it if you wish to pursue this career path.
What was your motivation to do like your attempt two or attempt three over pick up any other engineering job? Because since you already had that degree, that could have always been an option for you.
I think I couldn't resign myself to do a single dimensional job. So that was the biggest push factor. Though I had that degree, I never considered it as a degree. So I never considered it as a career choice. And this is something. This is one aspect of me that I think nobody knows is that. While preparing in my first attempt, I also cleared an exam called as Central Armed Police Force. This is also conducted by the UPSC. You might have heard of these forces called as CRPF, CISF, ITBP. I got selected into CRPF as an assistant commandant. So had nothing worked out, I would have definitely gone and joined. I had joined assistant commandant CRPF. I joined it in my third attempt. This was just before the results came out. I joined it and after 7 days, I learned that I cleared the exam. So I basically give my resignation. So I think I'm one of those guys who had the shortest tenure in CRPF.
So just circling back, like how do they evaluate your performance? Like how do you get promoted or like how do you move to the next step?
Part of it is time bound.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is I don't have a good euphemism for it, but you get the drift, right? I mean, it's influenced by a lot of the political and bureaucratic setup. So time bound as in, so right now I'm subdivisional officer. So my next posting would be either as CEO of a Zilla Parishad, or I would be a commissioner of a small city, small tier 2 city, municipal corporation. So after that, there are other options. So if my performance is good enough, it would either be a collectorship, collector in a particular district, or it could be as an MD in one of the state corporations. There are a lot of state corporations. Say like one is Mahabeej, which is basically Maharashtra Seeds Corporation, or there is one for soil conservation. One is for animal husbandry. So you can be in any one of these positions as an executive head.
Okay. And as an IAS officer, like what is the highest designation that you can ever achieve?
In the formal setup is the cabinet secretary. In the informal setup, I think it's the secretary of the PM office. So that's basically chosen, like you're chosen to be there. And in the formal setup, it's basically you get promoted to that level. So as I said, there is one is time bound, which basically depends upon your years in service that you have. And second is basically depending upon your the political bureaucratic setup of how you fit in the scheme of things.
Cool. So what's next? What are you excited about?
Excited about this? I'm actually excited about the next day. I'm excited about tomorrow. Kal kya karunga?
But the mindset is rubbing off on you. Huh?
No, it's just that ki I take it at a day at a time, because I do realize that a lot of things happen on a daily basis. And what next? If I take it beyond a month, it's pretty unpredictable. So I don't know where I'll be in 1 month. But I take it a day at a time, and I kind of enjoy it that way. So I haven't given much of a thought, because much of my work for the next 12 years is going to be of the same kind. Just the arena is going to, like, the district is going to change, or my title is going to change. But it's more largely of the same character. So I do not think too far ahead. It's just one day at a time. One of the things that kind of I could not appreciate it much is so whenever I go to a particular village or something, so this was, I think, October 2019 when I just joined. So I was visiting a few villages, and then they see every officer who comes to their village as a guest. Now, in the simple activity, when done in a city, what my mom would do to anyone who comes in is, you know, she used to give an envelope with some money in it, or she used to give anything of some value, and that value would be can be anything. It could be in money, or it could be in kind. A bachcha aayega to chocolate de denge, aisa kuch denge. So बच्चे के साथ ऐसा रहता है, बड़े के साथ you don't do that, ठीक है? But then these villagers are so innocent, and you know their understanding of life is so simplistic. What they used to do was that whenever I used to come, when I used to return, they used to give me some of their food produce. So I mean, there's this cucumber that grows over here. It's very big. It's like 1 foot long. इतना बड़ा काकड़ी रहता है वो. So they used to just give me that. They should say it in Marathi, ki sahib tumhi amcha gavi aale manun tumhala deto, which translate ki since you visited our village, this is our token of appreciation. So that's how these look at life, you know, in simple pleasures, and they are so happy, and they feel so, you know, they gleam with pride when they're giving it to you, and you're like, you can appreciate the whole thing, you know, what is it that makes them give this. So yeah, so that was one I think I'm going to just hit me when Tapan asked me that question.
Yeah, that's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
It comes down from the era, like when kings, a lot of farmers in the king era, they used to kind of give their first produce to the king. And that's how they used to kind of express their gratitude. So I think it carries forward from that.
Yes.
Recently, like I have been reading, and like most of the things, like philosophical books also, when you read, like most of it goes down to like to be happy, like you cannot desire a lot. And like I think, as you said, like in city we've gone into that rut of like competing with others, which is like, which has changed our mindset that we want this, but when you strip all of that down, then like most people are unhappy, and like they are seeking happiness. Which is funny.
Newton said, "If I have seen the future, it is by standing on shoulders of the giants." We bring to you these giants in the life of our guests. Our next segment is Top 3, a curated list of top 3 recommendations from our guests.
So starting with your top 3 book recommendations, and which book have you gifted the most?
So there's one book by Murakami that I really like, and I've gifted it a lot, which is What I Talk About When I Talk About Running. That's one book. Second would be, it's an author, Manu Joseph. He writes fiction. So there are 3 books that I really love. I put it in a single category because that's kind of my go-to book of fiction, if you ask me suggestions. And the third is, again, an author, Nashim Nicholas Taleb, his 3 books, Anti-Fragile, Black Swan.
And Black Swan.
Yeah, and Food by Randomness, yeah.
I'm currently reading Food by Randomness. I'm done, like I've read Black Swan and Anti-Fragile. So I was going through the series as well.
I haven't read them, but they've been referenced so much in different articles and books that I feel like I've already read all the important concepts.
And Nassim Taleb and Yuval Noah Harari, like everyone of our age should be reading at least. That's what I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. So top 3 movies or TV show recommendations?
I would go with TV shows, because I think movies are, it's been a while since I've seen movies. Top TV shows, I would say one would be The Spy, second would be Inside the Mossad, and third would be Fauda.
Awesome. And like top three podcasts or YouTube channels that you follow and recommend people?
So I mean, podcast, I'm recently getting introduced to it. So like I do like listening to a lot of financial podcasts. One of them is Capital Mind. It's actually a product, but I do like the founder. And
Deepak Shenoy is awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Deepak Shenoy. Second is one called Anupam Gupta. He's on Twitter as B50, I guess. These are two that I hear quite often. And the third one is Tim Ferriss.
What do we want to do? Top three reasons why someone should become an IAS officer.
I can do the opposite of it. Top three reasons why someone should not. To be honest, but then if you ask me, it's like I. So one of the reasons that I keep telling this is because for every successful bureaucrat that you, for successful IAS officer that you see, there are at least 100 that you don't see who have failed in the whole attempt. So, and it's pretty personal for me because I've seen, you know, these are my friends who are like very close friends down in the trenches. I was with them. So when I see myself up, there is always that feeling key, you know, no one should give this because I wouldn't want anyone, not even my enemy, to kind of be in those trenches. But to be honest, if you ask me key, what are the three qualities, I would say key, if you wish to work for something other than money, second would be experience something more than the ordinary, and third would be work for the underprivileged. These are the top three reasons that kind of qualifies you for not qualifies you, but then it should the IA should enchant you. It's very personal because one of my seniors had I forget his name, but then I have read one of his anecdotes wherein he says that every file that you have that comes from a person is actually his life in it. So it can be something as simple as he has a land matter, and that land matter would be against someone else who might be encroaching upon his land or not allowing him to work. So when you treat it with that kind of emotion, it kind of gives you an immense amount of satisfaction that if you in some way address his problem, you have done a lot more than anyone can, you know, ever do in his life.
I think we are reaching to the end of our podcast. It has been a pleasure having you and learning about your journey, learning about your navigation through the whole exam process to becoming an IAS officer and what you do now. Amazing insights, and I think this is definitely going to inspire a lot of people, and we are looking forward to releasing this episode and seeing where it goes. Thank you so much for joining in.
Thank you for having me, and I did find some of the questions to be very good. That kind of evoked a different perspective from me also. So yeah, thank you for that, and thank you for having me.
That's about it, folks. We will be back next week with another guest and another story. We would love to hear your thoughts about the episode. Feel free to reach out to us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. You can just search What The Hat Podcast. Also, subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Castbox, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcast from, so you never miss out on the next episode. This is Hiloni, Atit, and Tapan. Signing off, and this was What We Had.